Welcome to Home Story with Veronica. I'm Veronica Dickes, and today we're diving into the people, places, and decisions that make a house a home. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome to Home Story with Veronica, where real estate meets real life. I am Veronica Dickes, and today we are talking about a part of the home buying process that can completely change the strategy for a buyer without them even realizing it. Jumbo financing. This is for luxury buyers. A lot of people start shopping in the luxury market thinking the process will be basically the same, just with a higher price tag. But once a buyer crosses into jumbo territory, the rules can shift quickly. That means credit matters more, reserves matter more, documentation matters more, and one small mistake can affect the entire approval. Joining me today is Tyler Lombardo, who is here to help us break down what luxury buyers in Charlotte really need to understand before they start shopping. Tyler, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back to the show.
I would say thanks for having me back.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Can you just introduce yourself really quickly? Tell us who you work with and what you do.
Yeah. So my name's Tyler Lombardo. I work with Cross Country Mortgage up in Cornelius, North Carolina. And I'm a senior loan officer. I've been doing this for about 10 years now. Goes by like a blink of an eye.
Yes, it does.
I'm like, what the heck? I was like 24 when I got into
this. Yes, it does. And he's amazing. He's helped a lot of my clients. I absolutely highly recommend him. Now, in this segment, we're going to open the episode by helping viewers understand what makes jumbo lending different from a standard mortgage and why that matters so much in Charlotte's luxury market. The goal is to demystify the threshold, the expectations, and the planning buyers need before they fall in love with the wrong house too early. So, first question for you, Tyler. For buyers who are just starting to look at higher end homes, what loan amount typically pushes them into jumbo territory in Charlotte right now?
Yeah, so for the year of 2026, it's $832,750. It does
change. That's very exact.
Yeah, right. It does change every single year. So if you guys see this video next year, it may be a little bit different.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that means that if somebody gets a loan for that amount, it's no longer a conventional loan. It jumps into a jumbo loan.
Yep. So right above that.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Can you explain real quick, just give us a summary of what is a jumbo loan?
So a jumbo loan is financing that you receive over the conforming loan limit of which I just stated. And typically there are specific investors that are willing to lend that much money. All right. So it's typically big banks that we broker it out to, or not to get too technical, we can go and underwrite the files ourselves, but we are going to sell it to that investor that is on the warehouse.
Gotcha.
Who finances larger loan amounts than what Fannie, Freddie, and Jenny and all the typical places are.
Okay. Want to make sure our viewers understand what the difference is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Now, what changes first when a buyer moves from conforming loan into a jumbo loan? Is it the down payment, the documentation, or the level of scrutiny?
Well, honestly, the opening statement that you made, you kind of hit all points on that. All right. So there's just a lot more requirements. They are going to hold you at a higher level because we are providing you more money for financing. And we just want to confirm that, hey, you are going to be able to pay that mortgage back and whatever the loan terms are. So essentially, you need to have higher credit scores.
Okay.
And this is for the cookie cutter, best product, best term type of jumbo products.
What credit score are we talking about?
So I would probably say to get a really, really awesome interest rate for a jumbo loan, I mean, you got to be 750 plus.
Okay. All right. 750 plus is the goal. Okay.
Yeah, to get prime pricing. Typically, jumbo loans start at 10% down.
Okay.
All right. And not a lot of jumbo products will have private mortgage insurance on it, even if you put 10% down.
Okay.
All right. Now, there is a caveat to that. There are a ton of different jumbo products to help people purchase or finance those properties that don't meet the cookie cutter conforming.
Okay.
But typically, if you don't meet the cookie cutter conforming guidelines, the terms of the loan are going to be very drastic. All right. Rates are going to be higher.
Okay.
Maybe down payment amounts are going to be larger and things of that sort. So it really starts with your credit score, how much money you're making. So traditional mortgages, not niche products. Just remember, and I think some people tend to not know this, but it is income and credit driven, traditional mortgages. Because a lot of times I get people purchasing luxury homes and they are somewhat retired of some sort or something like that. And they're like, well, hey, I got X amount of $1 million in cash in a retirement account. Why can't you give me the loan? I'm like, well, unfortunately, to get the cheapest products, it's not asset based.
Gotcha.
It's income and credit.
Okay.
Know? Now, there are products to finance with asset qualifying loans and stuff like that, but they are going to be more expensive because it's non-traditional financing.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a wide range of products.
Gotcha.
And as I stated before, just hit home on this. If you make good money, have good credit, you're going to get the best possible pricing on loan products. If you don't and you don't meet that cookie cutter box, then the pricing is going to be more expensive.
Okay. And when you say the price is more expensive, we're talking about the interest rates.
Interest rates, yeah.
Okay. But there are options.
There are
options. Somebody who's retired, for example.
Exactly.
And they don't want to use all the cash that they have, or mm-hmm. they don't want to take all the money that they have in their retirement account, but they want to buy a luxury home mm-hmm. over the 800 and something thousand that you said.
Yep.
There are different programs that can help
100%,
as well. 100%.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And actually, I work with a lot of those clients because at my company, Cross Country Mortgage, we have a really, really good private money loan that can help people who are self-employed, who like use tax strategies to not have to pay so much taxes, which is understandable, or people that have a lot of wealth and assets and cash. And then we can provide them loans as well, too.
Okay.
So those are typically the people I work with because, and I'm just going to open up the curtain and tell everybody, if you're buying a luxury home and you have a lot of money with a certain bank, reach out to those guys first. Because a lot of times they have incentives and programs to have you below market interest rate. You know what I mean?
It's a good tip.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So if you have a lot of money or a lot of assets with a financial institution, I would reach out to them first because they are probably going to give you better products or better pricing on jumbo products.
Makes sense.
To be transparent.
No, that's good. Hey, that's why you're good at your job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell the truth.
Yes, tell the truth always. Now, what changes first when a buyer moves from a conforming loan to, we actually already talked about this, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Yes. A lot of people assume that jumbo always means 20% down. You mentioned 10% in this case.
Yep.
Now, is that actually true or are there more flexible options depending on the buyer profile?
So, yeah, and it always depends on the buyer profile. So 10% down, cookie cutter, jumbo products. There are some, that I know we have a 3.5% jumbo product.
Okay.
VA loans, they can go above $1 million. So if you're a veteran, I mean, you can get a conforming, a VA loan with 100% financing with over $1 million loan amount. You know,
very nice. Good. They deserve it.
Yeah, right. Same thing with physician loans as well, too. Doctor loans and stuff like that. So there's a bunch of different products. It depends on what your career and employment is. But yeah, standard 10% down. That's typically the go-to is 10% down.
That's awesome. Any other profession that you can think of that they can get?
There is an attorney loan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I've never used it personally, but I know it's out there. But I do a lot of physician and doctor loans.
So if you're an attorney, if you're a doctor, if you're a veteran, you're going to have great advantages.
Oh, yeah.
Getting into a loan for luxury homes. Mm-hmm.
Correct. With minimum.
Call Tyler. I love it. Now, when lenders look at luxury buyers, what credit score, we already talked about that a little bit, usually opens the door to the best pricing and strongest terms?
So I would say 680 is kind of like the bare minimum.
680 is the minimum.
680, you're going to have a lot of options. On the warehouse line for investors and things of that sort. But if you're underneath 680, there are other products. Like I have a deal going on right now that the person's credit score is 660.
Okay.
They weren't able to get financing anywhere else, but I have that private money.
For a luxury?
Yeah, for a luxury property.
Okay.
And I was able to provide them financing.
Nice. And you said the ideal one to get the best terms is 750 and above,
750
correct?
And above, correct. Yeah.
Okay.
But perfect. 680 is like the starting point.
Okay, so make sure you have at least 680 if you want to get started on this.
Yep, if you want to get traditional jumbo financing.
Yeah, okay. And what are the biggest mistakes that you see that can derail a jumbo approval, even for buyers who look strong on paper?
I think it's simple.
It's
providing the loan officer all the documents that they want. I don't know if I want to say this, but for some reason, when you deal with, and not everybody, but when you deal with clients that are wealthier and things of that sort, they're a little bit more reluctant to provide you documents or something along those lines.
Okay.
Because they feel like, hey, just because I make this much money and I have this much money, you should just give me a loan for and us not have to go.
Because they're financially secure.
Exactly.
Yes, right.
100%.
Right.
But just know guidelines on those products, they're a lot more conservative than typical financing. So unfortunately, you probably need more documents if you're purchasing a jumbo loan, which, I mean, because if we're giving you $1 million, we want to make sure that you can pay it back.
Exactly.
You know?
What advice, we still have a little bit of time before we have to go to our next topic. What advice do you give people who are just getting into the luxury market? They maybe had a home for a few years, they got a better job, and now they're ready to, you know, upgrade or buy that house on the lake or on the water or on the mountains, and the price difference will jump them into getting that jumbo kind of loan. It's already the non-conforming loan. What advice do you give them to get prepared for that?
Well, first things first is come talk to me before I should go look at properties. Because one, obviously taxes are going to be more expensive for those properties and things of that sort. And based on just experiences, a lot of times they're financially savvy, so they can do the calculations themselves, yeah, or they know the websites to get it from, but they're not using the correct information. So
that is personalized to their credit score, to their assets.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So reach out to me. I understand there's a lot of resources online and all that stuff, but every single time a client comes, oh yeah, I think my mortgage payment's going to be around da 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 da. I'm like, no, it's not actually, it's this.
Yeah.
Then I have to do a deep explanation of why, because they did it themselves and
yes,
they think that's more accurate.
And another, yes,
I'm providing.
Yes, and is it the same with anybody who checks their score when they're getting ready to buy a house, and it's totally different than what they're seeing online?
Yeah, and that's another thing too with credit, just in financing in general, those credit monitoring websites, they don't use the same credit scores as we do.
That's all right? Important.
So that is why your credit monitoring site that you're subscribed to or whatever, it's usually about 20 to 30 points higher based on what I have seen in my experience.
Yeah.
So then when somebody tells me what their credit score is, off the top of my head, I usually just minus 20 points off to know what it actually is.
So it's important to check with the lender directly. Yeah.
And that's another thing too, when I have a meeting with them, I always go over the credit report with them as well too, just to make sure what's on there is supposed to be on there and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I thought my scores were going to be a lot higher and this and that.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. And I'm like, then I go through the same explanation that I just told you guys. So.
Yeah. Now, what I love about this conversation is that it reminds us that in real estate, price is only part of the story. Preparation is what really creates confidence.
Yep.
So when buyers understand the financing early, they shop smarter, negotiate better, and faster when the right home appears. Coming up next, we are going to dive into one of the biggest real life questions move-up buyers ask. How do I buy my next home before I sell the one that I'm living in now? We'll be right back.
Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation.
Welcome back to Home Story with Veronica. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, you can catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. Today, I am here with Tyler Lombardo, and we are getting practical about one of the most stressful parts of a move-up purchase, how to buy the next home before the current one is sold. If you've ever wondered how families make that next move without feeling financially trapped between two homes, this is a segment to watch closely, because timing and financing strategy can make all the difference. In this segment, we are going to shift from qualification to logistics, and this is where the real life pressure kicks in for many homeowners. They may have strong equity, strong income, and a clear vision for the next chapter, but the transition between one property and the next can feel overwhelming. Here, we are going to explore the tools that can, the tools and timing, the strategies can make that move possible. And in this market that we're seeing nowadays, houses are not selling
thing
as fast. Yes, this is very, absolutely, because the market has slowed down a little bit. There is more inventory. So houses that used to sell in 7 days are now sitting on the market for 30, 60, 90 days.
Yep.
Actually, if you overprice your house, they're sitting over 90 days.
Yep.
If you don't overprice your house, you can sell it within 9 days or so. But anyways, that's a whole different show. Tyler, in plain English, what is a bridge loan and why can it be such a useful tool for someone trying to move from one home into another?
Yeah, so this is actually an old school product that was super popular back in the day.
Okay.
It just kind of vanished for some reason. And then this year—
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And then this year and last year, they became popular again because everybody's so equity rich.
Yes.
All right, so a bridge loan with the product that Cross Country Mortgage has, I can take 85% of your combined loan to value and provide that as a down payment to, as a cash asset to pay for your down payment and closing costs. So a lot of times when my clients choose to execute this product, they don't have to bring anything to closing.
Okay, so let's make it real. So I own a house and my house is worth, just for simple math, this is not gonna happen, $100,000.
Okay,
gotcha. So what can I do with that loan program?
Yep, so you're gonna times that by 85%.
Okay.
And then you're gonna minus whatever you own on your current mortgage lien.
Okay.
All right, and then that's gonna be the equity that we can use in order to transfer it over to your new property.
Okay,
all perfect. Right? Yep, so that allows buyers to be non-contingent when they submit their offer.
Right.
Yeah.
Meaning we don't have to say we have to sell the house in order for the buyer to buy your house.
Yep. So that's very helpful if you're in a competitive situation with another buyer.
Yes, it is.
Now, just to go over very simple terms of the loan. So it's a 4-month loan term.
Okay.
Right? And you can get 2 months of extensions on it, but it costs money.
Okay.
All right. And then essentially when you sell your current property, it pays off that lien and then you don't got to worry about it. But it's a short-term financing.
Okay.
And then there is an interest only payment on it, but it gets wrapped into the bridge loan every single month. So you don't actually pay it out of pocket.
Okay.
All right. But you do pay it off when your house sells.
So it's like using your equity, mm-hmm. literally, with a product that allows you to apply that equity directly into buying the other house.
Yes.
So that way you also don't have to close on two houses at the same time,
correct.
Which can be very stressful. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're moving, you pretty much have to get a hotel
yep.
for a couple of nights. And mm-hmm. if there's any delays, then all your stuff is sitting on a moving truck and
yep.
you're just waiting to close. That
no
happened to
fun.
One of my clients, yep. actually.
Yeah. So I always tell people, and I know they never like this, is that, hey, don't even look at houses. Sell your property first. Go rent out an Airbnb that's fully furnished. And then
that's not a bad idea.
And then yeah. go start looking at properties.
Yeah.
Because just how inconsistent housing or houses are selling right now in this market, it's messing up the logistics of everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that, and I think that's why the bridge loan product came back and it's so popular.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So with the bridge loan, you can buy your house without a contingency, move into that house, and then it's 4 months. You said ideally within four months, you sell your property.
And we can extend it by another 2 months, but it will cost
okay.
money.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when does a bridge loan make more sense than a HELOC, for example, a home equity line of credit for a buyer who wants to use the existing equity to make the next purchase happen?
So home equity line of credit, it's
or HELOC.
HELOC. It's frowned upon if the mortgage financial institution knows that your plan is to sell the property.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that is frowned upon. I know I'm sure there's some loan officers that will do it. But you're not typically supposed to do that. So, that's
you're not
why
supposed to
loans.
Get a HELOC, use the money, buy another house, and then sell the house and pay off
sell
the HELOC.
That one, correct. Yeah.
Okay.
HELOCs are more designed for debt consolidation, maybe remodeling your home, or what a lot of people use it for is purchasing investment properties.
Yes.
So that
that's what I used it for.
Yep. So they'll use their equity in order to expand their real estate portfolio. So that's what that's product is typically used for. If you have a HELOC on your property already and you got it before you were thinking about selling, then yes, you can use that for the down payment.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. But
okay.
if you have intentions to selling your property and you tell me that up front and then you want to get a HELOC for the down payment, I'm going to say, unfortunately, we can't do that. But we're going to do the public. Here's a bridge loan product that does the same exact thing.
Okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of viewers hear terms like piggyback financing or 80-10-10 and immediately feel intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
How does this structure actually work in real life?
Yeah, so that's also an old school way of structuring loans.
Okay.
All right, so when I first got into the industry 10 years ago, we were doing a lot of those and then it just kind of disappeared for whatever reason. But essentially what happens is you are putting 20% down, which means you have 80% loan to value. So that's where the 80-20
okay.
comes up, all right?
Okay.
So you get financing for your down payment and closing cost, but then you bring 10% of the down payment.
Okay.
All right. So that's an 80-10 loan or 80-20, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just kind of like a strategy on how to structure a loan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And who do you recommend that strategy to? In what cases?
So a lot of times we use that product or that strategy to get you underneath the conforming loan limit.
Okay.
In order, let's say like your finances aren't ideal to buying luxury property.
Okay.
that is one easy strategy to get you below the conforming loan limit. So then we can go off the conforming guidelines, which are a little bit more lenient than jumbo loans.
Okay, that makes sense, actually.
Or, yeah, because what happens is that it's essentially, it's a standalone second lien on your property or piggyback second lien on your property. So there is a monthly payment to that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so you're paying money on the financing for the down payment and then also on your current mortgage as well too.
Okay.
So maybe that's why it became unpopular because, you know, you're paying two mortgages
on
your property.
Okay. Can buyers use the equity in their current home for the down payment on the next one? And what has to line up for that strategy to work well?
Yeah, so if you want to go and transfer equity into the down payment, either your house has to sell the day of or before you're buying a new property.
So you would have to buy with a contingency to sell.
Mm-hmm, correct. Okay. Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Or the bridge loan, or if you have a HELOC already, and then we can do that. Or another thing that was super popular during the pandemic because everybody and their mothers were buying properties.
Yes, they were.
Which was understandable because rates were so low. But what a lot of people did to not have a contingent offer is if you were able to hold both mortgage debts in your debt-to-income ratio, we had this strategy called recasting your loan.
And
what that means is you buy a house with a minimum down payment, 3 to 5%, whatever product you qualify for, and then you buy the house. You have two mortgage payments, and hopefully by the time that you or shortly after you close on your new property, you sell your other property, and you can go and take a certain amount of your equity and apply it towards the principal balance, and the loan servicer will re-amortize your loan based on the new principal balance, so your monthly payment goes down.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Can people do that and then rent the other house that they were going to sell?
Well, no, because the house sold already.
Oh, it's sold already.
It's sold, and we're using the equity from the house that sold to do a recast and buy it to go.
I see what you're saying. So once that house sells, you use that portion and apply it here, and then the payment goes down.
Yep. So it's through the loan servicer, and I think you have to put down at least $10,000 to $20,000.
Okay.
And then they will do it for you, and I believe you can do it once per year, depending on your loan servicer. I'm sure it's different from servicer to servicer. And then I know for our servicer, it costs about $300 to do it.
Gotcha.
So you pay the loan servicer $300. They'll apply the principal balance, whatever the amount is.
Okay.
And then your monthly payments will change based on your new principal balance.
Very interesting.
Yep. So your interest rate stays the same. All your loan terms stay the same. It's just your monthly payment's cheaper now.
Gotcha. Right. Because the principal. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Now, what is the smartest way to plan timing so that a seller does not end up carrying two homes longer than expected and adding unnecessary stress?
Gotcha. Well, I guess I should have saved what I said at the very beginning to that.
That applies to that pretty much.
Sell your house.
Yeah.
Rent out a property for a month that's fully furnished. Put your stuff in a pod, storage unit, whatever.
Yeah.
And then take your time finding a new property. That's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Less documents are needed. You're not as stressed out trying to make sure the logistics work and all that stuff. And it's just a simpler process. I bought a couple houses in my lifetime, and I've always sold first, rented out an Airbnb for a month or two, and then looked at my leisure and then purchased a property.
Yeah.
But I understand a lot of people don't like doing that.
Right.
Because I bring it up every single time. They're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah. It can get, yes.
I know people have large families, pets, dogs, all that stuff.
Yes.
I do not. So
exactly.
It's easier for
me. And Airbnbs, you know, they can be tricky depending on where they live because they can cost more and all that. But again, look at the whole picture.
Yeah, right? That's the easiest way to do it.
Look at the whole picture, see what's more convenient, and then you make your decision based on informed and educated information up front so that you can make the best decision, whatever it is more convenient for
you. Yeah, and I think that is why you should go talk to a loan officer and a real estate agent about 6 months before you decide to buy a house.
Yes.
Because that
you can plan accordingly.
Yep. So you meet with me. I go through your finances. Yeah. If there's any tweaks or anything I need you to fix real fast, you have 6 months to do it. So no pressure. And then when everything's good to go, you know exactly what your payment is. You know exactly what you're doing.
Yep.
And then you can go find a property. Because I feel like if you find a house first and then you come to me.
It's
me jumping through hoops trying to get stuff down.
Yeah.
And then the client always has an expectation of what the payment is going to be. And then when I tell them what it's going to be, it's always a little bit higher than what they expected.
Yep.
And then I feel like it kills the mood, kills the vibe.
It kills the vibe.
It kills the vibe.
And we don't want that.
Yeah.
Especially luxury buyers, they tend to be very informed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why they've gotten to where they are.
Yep.
So definitely prepare at least 6 months ahead. Now, up next, we're going to talk about a group of buyers who often look incredibly successful in real life, but surprisingly complicated on paper. Self-employed and high-income borrowers navigating luxury homes. We'll be right back.
Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation.
Welcome back to Home Story with Veronica. And in this segment, we are going to focus on a buyer profile that shows up all the time in today's market. Entrepreneurs, we count as that. Mm-hmm. Commission earners, we count as that. Mm-hmm. And high-income professionals whose financial reality is much stronger than their paperwork may first suggest. We are that.
Yeah.
This conversation matters because these buyers often assume success automatically means easy approval. And that is not always how underwriting works.
No.
And don't I know that personally.
Yep.
Now, Tyler, in your opinion, why do high-income buyers still get denied for a luxury loan sometimes, even when they clearly have the lifestyle and earnings to support the purchase?
Because if you're self-employed, we go off your bottom line number. I think what a lot of people think is that we go off
Their
revenue. We go off profits, all right? And if you are a self-employed borrower and able to purchase a luxury home, you typically are making a decent amount of money and you got to pay a lot of taxes. So if you hire a good CPA, bookmaker.
Oh, dear Uncle Sam.
Yeah, right? They're going to go and provide you the tax strategies to make sure that you don't have to pay as much taxes. But then what that does for you, if you're looking to buy a house, it lowers your yearly income that I can use for you, all right? And I think that's what happens with a lot of self-employed borrowers, you know? And then there's, I don't wanna say there's an argument, but there's a disbelief, like, hey, my company made $3 million last year and this and that and blah, blah, blah. I go, yeah, but you wrote off the majority of it.
Yeah.
Or your CPA did, so, you know, to help you with tax and stuff like that. So based on a mortgage company eyes, you made $50,000 last year. You know
yes.
what I mean? So it's just, it's kind of, you kind of have to provide them a reality check.
And it's that impossible balance in between accounting and being able to prove that you did make, you know, a substantial amount of money and you can absolutely pay for the house, but it needs to look good on paper.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that can be challenging for self-employed.
It is.
Because, I mean, we're trying to take advantage of all the tax breaks and all that stuff. And so it's very important that you talk to professionals again.
Yep, exactly.
So that you can prepare accordingly on that.
And I'm very fortunate to have two individuals in my life. One is a billionaire, and then the other one is a centi-millionaire, which means he has over $100 million in cash assets.
Nice.
Not including anything else. And one thing that they both told me is get used to paying a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
Don't try to do a tax strategy to knock it out or anything of that sort.
Oh, I gotta love it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So learn to love your taxes, self-employed borrowers.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. Yeah. I'll get there eventually.
Exactly. But this is actually one of my favorite topics too, because I do a lot of business with self-employed borrowers buying luxury homes due to our private money loan that we have.
Yeah.
So I basically, if you take tax advantages on your tax returns, I can use alternative income revenue or whatever you want to call it in order to supply you that mortgage and some testimonials. So I got in touch with a bunch of YouTubers that do very, very well for themselves.
Interesting.
Yep, okay. Exactly.
Influencers.
I'm not going to name the YouTube channels that they have, but these guys make a lot of money. Obviously, they take tax strategies.
I need some tips. I need to meet these people.
Yeah, seriously. I know. I'm like, you do what? And then I'm like, you make what?
I
messed the wrong career.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure to learn how to play an instrument. But anyways.
Yeah.
but essentially, the story is that they were pre-approved. There was three of them. They were pre-approved for $350,000 through another mortgage loan officer based off their tax returns.
Okay.
But all of them wanted $2.5 million houses. And when they came to me, they're like, we make a lot of money. I think our CPA doing us a favor for not doing
right.
Yeah, that this is what our tax returns come out. And it was from a flyer I left at a real estate office too. So I didn't know this realtor.
That's awesome.
And then she called me. She was like, maybe you can help me out. But anyways, I was able to go and look through their deposits through their business bank statements.
Okay.
Add all those up. And then I was able to provide a monthly income based off that. And all three of them were able to buy the $2.5 million house.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So that was good for the realtor, good for the client, and also good for
me. Oh, the realtor was very happy, I guarantee you. Hands down.
Yeah, that probably made her year.
Pretty much.
Exactly. So we can go through bank statements. We can go through 1099s. We can do profit and losses. We can do verification of employments. It's just this private money loan has just opened up a lot more opportunities for clients and also people that I've met, retired professional athletes. They don't no longer have the big paychecks coming through, but they have a lot of assets. So I do a lot of asset qualifying loans with the professional athletes and things of that sort to get them their financing and all that. Another thing that just came out is called an asset utilization.
Okay.
So if you have the income, but not enough in order to qualify for it, I can take whatever cash assets you have and do a calculation, and it provides me an additional monthly income stream that I can apply it to the debt to income ratio.
Okay.
All right. So this product just opened up a lot more opportunities for clients, myself, and also different strategies on how to get people financing. And it's my CEO's own money as well too. So that's why we're able to do that.
Okay. So lesson learned, if you get a no somewhere else, it doesn't mean you're going to get a no everywhere.
Correct.
So make sure that you keep knocking on that door until you find the right person to really help you with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then even with conforming loans as well too, people who own construction companies.
Yeah.
Those guys are also make a lot of money through cash and stuff like that. I do a lot of work with construction owners as well too.
Okay. That's good to know.
Another industry I probably should have got into and known in my life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Concrete. Concrete. Have you seen the concrete ones?
I'm like, my gosh. We digress. These guys make money.
You want to pour concrete and play an instrument on YouTube. Now, for a self-employed buyer preparing early, what documents should already be organized before they even begin the application process?
So this is my process because the private money loan is going to be more expensive than traditional financing. So I'm always going to try to get you traditional financing because that's the cheapest product. All right. So I'm going to ask for your tax returns.
Yeah.
1099s, W-2s, K-1s, whatever however you pay yourself and all that stuff. I'm going to collect everything, personal and business returns. I'm going to do the traditional calculation for
it.
If I can get you approved for that, cool, awesome. If I can't, then I'm going to pivot to that private money loan.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go and really understand how your business makes money, where the money's coming from. And then from there, I'll do the bank statement loan, bank statement, profit and loss. If you W-2 yourself, then I'll do the verification of employment where I can just use your W-2 income. If you're 1099, then I'll just get 2 years of your 1099s and then qualify you off that.
Okay. So one thing that people need to do to make sure that they have everything that you need, everything else you have to do for the taxes, but profit and loss. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big one that I've seen that people usually don't have it ready and then they have to prepare it with an accountant. So keep your profit and loss.
And also too, profit and loss is the best way to look at your business on a month-to-month basis and then be able to tweak to like, hey, I didn't make any money this month. Did I overspend? Did I not get enough business? It's also a great way to understand your business and what's going on. And the reason why I bring that up is because, nobody does a profit and loss for their business month-to-month. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
Like I do one.
I have a love and hate relationship with profit and loss.
I know what's coming in. I know what I spent. And I know what my profits are.
Yeah.
And if I don't like where my profits are at, I'm going to look how many leads did I get. And so it's just like a good way to like tweak your business on a month-to-month basis.
Get a bookkeeper if you don't want to do it yourself. That's
what I do. Right. Okay.
I got a bookkeeper. They put everything for me and they send it to me once a month. And then I either ignore it or I look at it depending on how I'm feeling.
I know we kind of went off topic there, but that's a great thing you should be looking at consistently in your business.
Yes. That's going to help you anyways to get into your luxury home.
Yeah. But you're right. They usually don't have those documents ready for me. And then what I typically do is like, hey, just introduce me to your CPA accountant or
whatever,
and I'll just get what I need from you. Yeah. Then typically 95% of the time the CPAs will just send it over to
me. Perfect.
But there's always those CPAs that are like, oh, that's against the rules. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Then they cause some issues.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with CPAs.
Oh, yeah. We'll do. And Uncle Sam. Yeah. How do tax write-offs affect buying power, specifically for business owners who have spent years trying to reduce taxable income?
Gotcha. So something that I look at. So if I see a huge write-off, my first question is, hey, was that a one-time thing or is that something that's consistent year-to-year basis?
Okay.
Because if you can prove to me that it was a one-time—
like you made a big investment on your company,
yeah,
and you
right.
bought equipment mm-hmm. one
and all
year.
That stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like a little story, one of the construction workers I was doing, he had to buy a whole new fleet of trucks.
Exactly.
Because his trucks were pretty much beat up and done.
Okay.
So that it was like over $100,000. I think it was close to $200,000 that he did. Wrote it off. When I saw that there on the line, I was like, what's this car expense?
Yeah.
$200,000. I was like, my gosh.
What did you buy?
Yeah, right? I was like, what do you got, like a Ferrari or something like that? And he was like, no, I had to buy a new fleet of trucks. So he proved to me that it was a one-time expense. So I was able to add back $200,000 of income, which then he was able to get approved for traditional financing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How can people get a hold of you if they want to work with you? They're trying to get, you can get a hold of Tyler for anything that you need, any type of loans. But in this show, we're talking specifically about getting into the luxury market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking into getting into a luxury market or you're already in the luxury market and want to get another property, how can people get a hold of you so that you can help them out?
586-260-0307. That's my personal cell phone number. Or just look up Tyler Lombardo Cross Country Mortgage and you can go to my landing page. They'll have all my information on there as well too.
And you'll see the name on the screen, but let's go ahead and share your phone number again one more time.
586-260-0307.
Love it. Work with him. He's amazing.
Thank you.
Now, last question before we go to our next segment. When does a qualifying mortgage or private money solution actually make sense? And how can buyers tell the difference between a smart alternative and an expensive mistake?
A non-QM loan. So all jumbo products are going to be non-QM. That private bank loan, a loan that I told you is a non-QM loan.
Okay.
And non-QM, non-qualifying mortgage, it just means it doesn't go off conforming guidelines.
Okay.
That's what that means.
So really, I think this is a question that really needs to be answered on a case-by-case basis. Mm. Once you talk to somebody and you do the whole analysis of everything and find what they qualify for, then you put everything on the table and you tell them, okay, these are all the programs they qualify mm-hmm. for. These are the ones that you don't, so let's just put them aside. And then they can make a decision on what's best for them.
Yeah, yeah. And also, too, I think the art of meeting with the clients is lost in the mortgage industry after COVID.
Yes.
Because we were like, oh, wait, we can do business without meeting with the clients anymore. Because when I first started, like everybody came to the office. We had a sit down meeting in the, you know, going over everything. I still do that today.
Yeah.
Because one, it builds trust. And also two, for an educational standpoint, it's easier for the person to understand. I got visuals. I got graphs.
Exactly.
I got all that stuff. But essentially, I have a loan selection meeting. So client comes in. Based on what they're told me, what their goals are, what they're trying to execute. I usually have about three loan options available for them.
Yep.
And then when I'm going through it, I'm looking at them, and the one I want them to choose, I start circling it.
Yep.
I start drawing.
That's it. I need to cut you off.
Yeah.
We're going to be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. We're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation.
Welcome back to Home Story with Veronica. Stay connected to the show and every Now Media TV favorite live or on demand anytime you like. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. If you're on the move, catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv. I am back here with Tyler Lombardo, and now we are going to talk about how homeowners can turn one smart move into a long-term will. This is one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. If you've ever looked at your current home and wondered whether it could become an investment property instead of just a past chapter, this conversation could completely change the way you think about your next luxury purchase. In this final segment, we are connecting financing to long-term vision. Many homeowners do not just want a new house, they want to make smarter use of the property that they already have. And this is where lending strategy, rental income, and investment planning all start to work together. So, Tyler, can someone keep their current home as a rental and still qualify for a luxury primary residence, or does that usually make underwriting much harder?
It does make underwriting harder, but yes, you are able to do it.
Okay.
So essentially what's going to happen is we got to confirm that you can hold both mortgage debts in your debt to income ratio, which is the ratio we use to qualify you and what purchase price you can buy. So if you can hold both debts, it's easier because we don't have to get all the additional documentation. But if you can't, this is what we're going to need. You're going to have that property rented out before you close on your new house, or at least a signed lease agreement. All right. You're going to need a security deposit in a bank account, and you're going to need the first month's rent.
Okay.
As well too.
So you have to show that it actually hit your account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
100%. And then we can count 75% of that lease.
Okay.
So we can't count the full amount. We can count 75%. And that's for expenses throughout the year.
Okay.
All right.
So for somebody who bought a house 10 years ago, they can definitely rent it for whatever mm-hmm. the mortgage is most likely.
Yep,
so that exactly. would be a great strategy.
Yep. 100%. And then as long as you qualify for it, because a lot of people aren't cash heavy.
Right.
So all their equity or all their money's in their property. So then that would be a good strategy to get the HELOC out on.
Right.
And then use that for the down payment for your next house and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's how I would probably strategize it if you didn't have enough money for the down payment on the new property.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, can expected or documented rental income from the departing home help a buyer qualify? And what does a lender need to count it?
Yeah. So I jumped ahead on that, my bad.
That's exactly, but that's fine.
Essentially what I just stated,
it
is a little bit more of a pain because having to find a tenant within a certain time frame, because most people don't want to look for a tenant until they're under contract on the next house.
That's what they're going to need. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, what is a DSCR loan and how is it different from a traditional mortgage for someone building an investment portfolio in the luxury market?
Yeah, so a DSCR loan is essentially, we're going to take whatever the mortgage payment is, and we have to look at the rental comps in the area for the property. And as long as the rental comp is 75% what the mortgage payment is,
okay,
or above, we can go and give you a loan.
Okay.
All right. Now, with that though, the DSCR ratio, so it's the rental comp divided by the mortgage payment.
Okay.
If it's below 0.75%, you have to put more money down, at least with our product.
So that way it'll get to the number mm-hmm. where the mortgage needs to be.
And what I'm starting to find out is I've saved a couple of DSCR loans is that our private money loan, we'll go below the 75% DSCR ratio.
Okay.
You have to put 30% down, but we'll still give you the property.
Okay. Exactly. Have you seen a difference when you're doing this type of loan in the luxury market?
Yeah, I actually have a client that has used this product for their advantage.
Yeah.
He's probably bought 5 or 6 luxury properties in the last 24 months.
In 24 months?
Uh-huh, yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yep, I think he was tired of the corporate life and he wanted to, you know, be an entrepreneur, and he had a large asset that he, you know, took half of it out, if I remember correctly. And then that's what he used for the down payments
to
buy these properties. Yeah, so.
So he bought one luxury home, he's renting them out?
Yep, he's renting them all out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then with that, he was able to show that he's renting them out, the income.
Well, with the DSCR, it's just rental comp, mortgage payment.
That's it.
There's not a lot of documents to it.
Okay. So beautiful. So that's even easier. I'm glad I asked that question.
I don't have to show income documents.
Okay.
I just got to show proof of sourced deposits sourced for the down payment closing costs.
Okay.
And then we can also close it in an LLC.
Okay.
Yeah. So now you don't have to do the quick claim deed and transfer it over at a later point and all that stuff.
You can do it on your business already.
Yep. And excuse me, it will not be tied to you personally either. So it will not show up on your credit report because it's in your LLC.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
That's a great way to do it. You can have some water if you need to.
Yeah, thank you.
Allergies. Allergies in North Carolina. If you're not in North Carolina, don't come right now.
Yep.
Now, can DSCR financing work for short-term rentals or Airbnb-style properties anywhere in North Carolina as well? And what should buyers understand before counting on that type of strategy?
Yes. Yeah, so DSCR, you can do short-term rentals for vacation homes or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
But the neighborhood that you're purchasing in, the properties in there have to be 50% short-term rentals.
Okay. Okay, that's a requirement for the DSCR loan?
Based on
okay.
the last one I did, yes.
So you really have to concentrate, if you want to get into this luxury market, you really have to concentrate on places where it's a high density of Airbnb properties.
Exactly. And with DSCR or just investment properties in general, a really big realtor out of Tennessee told me this when I first started. She goes, money is in the preparation. So when you're looking to do this, just don't wing it and shoot off the hip and start, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Because you're gonna get yourself in trouble. Sit down with me, we'll go over everything, what the payments are gonna be and da-da-da, and then go over to Veronica, and then she starts pulling the neighborhood datas of the prop or in the neighborhoods that you wanna purchase in, all right? Because if the rental comp does not match the guideline requirements,
right,
those deals become super difficult.
Okay, okay.
And really expensive.
So look at really touristy places, like here in North Carolina, I can think of the mountains. People go to the mountains, skiing areas. Mm-hmm.
Yep, beach and stuff like that. And also
waterfront properties.
I want to say the website's called AirDNA.
AirDNA. Yep. AirDNA is fantastic. I use it a lot.
And it has all that data.
Yes.
All right, so it's one source website.
Yeah.
Put in whatever data you're trying to retrieve and the website will provide
AirDNA. And I mean, if you've gone to Airbnb and you've tried to go to luxury properties that are either on the water or, you know, they have the mountain view and everything, you're going to see the prices.
Yeah.
Can be crazy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it is a great investment to get into the luxury market for short-term rental.
100%.
For sure.
Yeah, that one client, because I do a lot of mortgages for him.
I know
how much he's making off those luxury investment properties.
Yeah.
He's doing pretty well for himself.
That is amazing. That is amazing. I love when people do well in real estate, when they invest in real estate. What are the most common financing mistakes that future landlords make when they get excited and try to scale too fast, in your opinion? Like what you said, you know, when they just wing it and they just get a property without doing the research.
So I think the first one is in this industry, there are good real estate agents and there are good loan officers. And then there's also, I don't want to call them bad, but maybe just not as knowledgeable as some of
maybe they don't go above and beyond.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
there's good and great.
So pick and choose your realtor and your loan officer. You know, interview them. Honestly, ask how much business they do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if you're looking to go and invest into a large property, you want somebody who does well in the market that you're in. Don't use your cousin who does this part-time or anything of that sort. That's where the biggest mistakes happen.
Yes.
Is when the realtor doesn't understand or the loan officer doesn't understand how these products work and how important
the long-term
it is to
vision.
Make sure that you have a full profile picture of what you are purchasing as a luxury investment property.
Absolutely. All right? And I mean, I've deterred people from doing it because they were looking in the wrong place. They were looking at the wrong price range. They were for what they wanted the property to do for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're talking about investment on this segment in specific. So it's not the same as just, this is the house that I love and I want to live there. This is a long-term plan that you are making sure that it's going to give you the return that you need, that you are not going to be on the negative, that you are going to have a profit.
Yep.
So there's a lot of things that go into it.
A lot of math.
A lot of math.
Like, I feel like when you're buying a primary home that you're going to live in, it's emotional.
Yeah.
You vision yourself playing in the yard with the kids, hey, having family over for holidays.
Yes.
When you're buying investment properties, straight up math equation. That's all it is.
It's not for you. It's for somebody else to enjoy.
Exactly. Yep. So we have to do the math up front, make sure the math checks out. And then if math checks out, then pull the trigger on it. Let's rock.
Yep. Another example that I have for a luxury home that my clients ended up having to sell was because there was an HOA and they were able to do short-term rental for a little bit. And then the HOA changed it.
Gotcha.
And they said, now it's a 6-month minimum rental agreement. Mm. And that doesn't work for Airbnb. So that's why they had it. That's literally because it was paying for itself and they don't want to be paying for this property.
Yep.
Because now they're on the negative and they had to sell the property.
Yep.
And these are the things that we're going to look at. I always look, is there an HOA? Anything can change if you're going to buy on an HOA. They can change the rules on you.
And I think that was a great point that you brought up. Read the HOA bylaws.
Oh my gosh,
you'd be surprised at what HOA does not allow rental properties in the neighborhood.
Yes, that's one of the first questions I ask for investment.
Well, good. Yeah, exactly.
Is there an HOA and what are the rules?
Yeah, because I've had a couple clients use real estate agents that didn't look through the HOA and not even on investment properties, just
general.
Primary real estate. And for one example, this person, she boarded dogs for a living.
Okay.
She made good money doing it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They changed
the realtor. Showed her this proper, gorgeous house. big backyard.
And she bought it.
She bought it.
And she can't do the dog thing.
Nope.
Oh no.
So had to move out of the house or sell the house immediately. Lost her. Lost money on
that. That is horrible.
Just because they did not read the HOA bylaws.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why.
And we digress a little bit, but I think this is very important.
Yes.
When we're talking about investment properties, especially in the luxury market, because you're going to be investing a lot of money on a luxury home.
Big monthly payment, all that stuff. So you got to make sure you're able to make money on it.
Yes. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me
back. For the second time. He's amazing again. This was so, there was so much clarity to this conversation. And thank you for joining Home Story with Veronica, where every home has a story and every smart decision helps write the next chapter in your luxury purchase. We will see you next time. Thank you so much for watching.